Okay, good morning, members. I'm going to call Human Services, Finance, and Policy to order. Today is markup day, so we will be taking amendments to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Omnibus Bill. First, we're going to take the roll. Ms. Hansen, please take the roll.
First, good morning, everyone. Chair Schultz.
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner.
Present.
Albright is excused. Representative Burkle.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen. Representative Keel. Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandell. And Representative thank you, sir. Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We do have a quorum. Let's see,
Madam
Vice Chair.
Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I got skipped in the roll call and just wanted to note that that I am present.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. We see you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bolden is present.
Thank you.
Sorry, Ms. Hansen was cutting out, so internet issues. Anybody else? Okay, I think we have everyone. We'll look to see if others arrive and note their presence. Vice Chair Bonner, would you like to move the minutes from April 7th?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from April 7th, 2021.
Great. Vice Chair Bonner moves the minutes. Any discussion or questions or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor of adopting the minutes from April 7th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes from April 7th, 2021 are adopted. We also need to correct the minutes from our March 5th meeting. It was a correcting a vote from nay to aye, I believe, and those were sent out to you. So the March 5th, look those over, and I'll move that correction of the March 5th minutes. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of moving or correcting the March 5th minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the correction to the March 5th minutes are adopted. Okay, members, so today, I'm going to first move House File 2127, so it's before the committee. We laid it over yesterday. And then the motion is to send House File 2127 to be referred to Ways and Means. I'm also going to move the DE1. This is the DE1 amendment that is the Human Services Omnibus Bill that we got an overview on Tuesday. And we took testimony on the DE1 yesterday. So I will move the DE1 and I'm going to briefly go through the author's amendment to the DE1, which is the A18 author's amendment. And that is also in your packet, members. So the author's amendment, the A18, first, it incorporates House File 294, which is Representative Noor's bill that we heard in committee. It's a report to the legislature on runaway and homeless youth. It also incorporates House File 1202, which was Representative Wolgamott's bill that we also heard in committee, that counties were requesting a change. It goes allowing face-to-face contact with child and primary caregiver in response to report of sexual abuse or child endangerment, postponing that for no more than 5 calendar days if the child is safe and they have to prioritize other cases where children are not safe. So that language is in the amendment. There's also technical corrections from DHS in this amendment to clean up language and to make specific changes. For example, on the SUD rate changes that we heard about yesterday, there's changes to the grant administration percentage going from 3% to 10%. There's movement 90 days after federal approval instead of upon federal approval in several instances. And then the biggest section of the A18 amendment is clarifying the duties of the Regional Quality Council. This is being brought forward by counties. So in the governor's proposal, we've eliminated the state quality councils because they were no longer meeting. And we transferred those funds from the state to the regional quality councils. And there's a list of duties that the stakeholders requested, and that language is in the amendment. Also in the amendment is a collective bargaining language for SEIU and for PCAs. There's language fixing the repealers from the DE1 on the quality councils and the waiver reimagined language that was incorporated. And then there's language from DHS, technical language, fixing some conflicts with conforming changes we've made and conflicts with language from Article 4 that rendered a section not necessary, and that was Section 51. And then the rest of the amendment just corrects the appropriations article, making changes and updating from new fiscal notes the appropriation amounts on various pieces of legislation. So that's the author's amendment. Are there any questions from members on the A18 amendment? I'm not seeing any questions. So again, I'll renew my motion to adopt the A18 amendment to the DE1. This is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Okay, the motion prevails and the A18 amendment is adopted. The next amendment we're going to take up is the A6 amendment. The A6 amendment was brought forward by AARP and other stakeholders, and it's to continue the Governor's Council on an Age-Friendly Minnesota. This amendment authorizes the continuation of this council. It's no cost. The Minnesota Board of Aging is going to continue covering the continuation of the council. They're doing work on, the focus is on emergency preparedness for older adults. And this amendment allows them to continue that work until a permanent council can be put in place by statute. They're gonna work on improving the lives of older Minnesotans and communities they call home. The focus and coordination of the work is looking at what our state agencies are doing, local governments, the private sector on building a more age-friendly state, and promoting change at the community level with an emphasis on structures, services, community features that support older residents, such as transportation options, safe, affordable places to live, a community commitment to health and wellness, and opportunities to stay engaged and productive. So I'm gonna move the A6 amendment. Sorry, I forgot to do that. And this is, again, a no-cost amendment, and it continues the council, I believe, through October of this year. Are there any questions on the A6 amendment? Seeing no questions from members. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, I'm sorry, I was distracted by a call I got. So I just want to confirm, is this tied to, Maple Grove has something like this, and it's tied to a UN program on age-friendly communities. Is this a similar thing, or is it related to it?
This is, and it may be similar to it, and they may be connected. I'll have to get back to you offline, but, I have Mr. Pollack is here. Assistant Commissioner Pollack, can you answer that question for Representative Robbins, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Robbins, good morning. So this amendment was drafted by AARP, but it does reflect work that Maple Grove has been doing to be an age-friendly community. And the goal of the Executive Order Council is to try to extend that opportunity to other communities around the state. This is just extending some work that they've already been doing this year and allowing them to continue work, I think, into October of 22.
Great, thank you for clarifying.
Any other questions from members? Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Pollack, for that clarification. Okay, so I'll renew my motion to adopt the A6 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A6 amendment is adopted. Okay, the next amendment we have on the docket is the A15 amendment, and these are corrections to House File 944, which we heard in committee. Representative Hansen, would you like to move the A15 amendment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hansen moves the A15 amendment. Would you like to speak to your amendment, Representative Hansen?
Sure. Thank you, committee members, and thank you, Madam Chair. Last month when I presented this, I referred to this bill as a work in progress. And today I am very excited to offer this amendment as an innovative solution to a long overdue issue. The stakeholders that came together worked extremely hard and collaboratively to come up with this creative solution. And I just want to give a special shout out to Sue Abderholden with NAMI and DHS, who are also with us to answer technical questions. And a really special thanks to staff for working so hard to bring this home. I won't go into all of the detail about this complex issue again, just for the sake of time. But in short, this amendment fixes the third path issue I covered in my original presentation. Again, there are about 700 children each year who go through the foster care channels through Chapter 260 C&D to receive care at treatment facilities. And this amendment is the product of that collaboration, which will unravel 260 C&D from 245. Like I said, this has been an issue for a number of years, and I'm so proud of the working group that put together this innovative solution, and I'm grateful for the bipartisan support that this bill has earned throughout its lifespan in the legislature. So with that, I will answer any questions and turn this over for hopefully an inclusion. And I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, for all the work. And it's very helpful to have your expertise with us so you can work on these issues with the stakeholders. We really appreciate that. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Hansen for all of her hard work on this very complicated topic. And I appreciate her informing me and about all the nuances here. And I just think this is such an important thing to get fixed. We don't need to be bringing children unnecessarily through the foster care system just because they need to seek treatment. And so I appreciate all of her thoughtful work on it and am supportive of her efforts. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Any other questions from members? Okay, Representative Hansen renews her motion to adopt the A15 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A15 is adopted. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Okay, the next amendment we have is the A8 amendment. This is House File 947, Section 6, which we heard in committee. Representative Pinto, would you like to move the A8 amendment? Oh, you're muted.
There we go. Yes, Madam Chair, so moved. And I'm happy to explain it if you'd like at this time.
Representative Pinto moves the A8 amendment. Please explain it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 947 was heard in the committee and received very strong bipartisan support. I think it was nearly unanimous. This is the proposal that makes some changes to how we address kids who have gone astray and committed delinquent acts. A portion of that proposal is in the area of our Human Services A committee. We had voted the full bill on, and what the amendment would do is simply add the provision that relates to our committee's jurisdiction to our budget bill in particular. This is the piece that adjusts the age at which a child is directed to the child protection and child welfare system, as opposed to the juvenile delinquency system, that to include 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds. And again, I think there was strong support for that, and I'd ask for your support to include it in our broader proposal.
Thank you, Representative Pinto, for all the work you're doing on that bill. Are there any questions from members on the A8 amendment? I'm not seeing any questions. So Representative Pinto renews his motion to adopt the A8 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A8 amendment is adopted. The next amendment we have is the A7 amendment. This is House File 1299. Representative Frederick, would you like to move the A7 amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves the A7 amendment. Can you describe the amendment, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. 1299 is a collaborative effort with Representatives Frankie Baker Thompson and myself. We had multiple meetings with the counties and substance use disorder treatment providers. It took a few meetings to get everybody on the same page, but how it used to work when a treatment provider was looking to come into a county, they had to work with the counties to establish what was called the letter of need. When approximately 15% of people of Minnesota who need substance use disorder treatment are getting it, it's pretty fair to say that it's needed everywhere across the state. And so what this does is kind of change the process from establishing that letter of need to a notification process, but it also has language in there to make sure that communication between the providers and the counties and DHS still takes place. That was one of the challenges and that everyone that people expressed concerns about. We were able to work through, and this was consensus language between everyone, and I would appreciate all the support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Are there any questions on the A7 amendment? Not seeing any questions. Okay, Representative Frederick renews his motion to adopt the A7 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A7 amendment is adopted. Next, we're going to jump to the A10 amendment. Representative Sandell, this is corrections to House File 1390. Would you like to move the A10 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A10 amendment.
So moved. Please describe your amendment.
Well, thanks very much for your attention this morning to the A10 amendment in House File 2127. It modifies provisions originally offered in House File 1390, which was authored by Representative Bierman. The Minnesota Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinics, referred to often as the CCBHCs, are part of a new model of developing an integrated behavior health care to Minnesotans in a kind of a one-stop shop, a terrific organization and operation. It was originally built under a federal demonstration. The CCBHC model is becoming a benefit under medical assistance. There are currently 8 clinics operating across the state of Minnesota, with approximately a dozen more to be added in the next 2 years. That's terrific. As the state's CCBHC model is moving into state plan authority, we want to update the Minnesota statutes to align with the state plan, providing clarity and model structure, and update federal citations in the current law. House File 1390 adds some clarity to the current clinic model, and the A10 amendment incorporates technical assistance from DHS and a provision regarding referral standards and criteria that the CCBHC providers and DHS need more time to work out. It adds clarity to a rate setting section, adding more situations under which rates can be adjusted and timing parameters established. And it modifies the timeline for transitioning the payment structure to align with the IT programming delays recently learned at the MIT agency. There are no additional costs related to this amendment, and I hope it can be approved by your vote. Thanks very much. Chair Schultz will be happy to answer some questions if I can.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Are there any questions on the A10 amendment? I am not seeing any questions. So Representative Sandell renews his motion to adopt the A10 amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A10, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A10 amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Sandell.
Chair Schultz and members, thank you very much.
Okay, next we'll move to the A4 amendment. Representative Rasmussen, would you like to move the A4 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A4 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen moves the A4 amendment. Can you describe the amendment, please?
Yes. As some of you may recall, when Representative Edelson presented her bill on a review of sober home policies, there was a discussion on including sober homes who are not members of the Minnesota Association of Sober Homes as stakeholders in this review process. The A4 amendment simply adds these sober homes who are not members of the statewide association as stakeholders. Representative Edelson and I have discussed this amendment, and she has graciously accepted it as a friendly amendment. I would ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Are there any questions on the A4 amendment? I'm not seeing any. So Representative Rasmussen renews his motion to adopt the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. The next amendment I'm going to offer, I'm going to move the A14 amendment. And this amendment, many of you may have received emails. We heard testimony from facilities like Claire Housing. Their concern was that they would have to get assisted living licensure to be eligible for customized living reimbursement. This amendment corrects some of that issue. We'll still need to do a little bit more work on it before, possibly when it gets to the House floor. But I'm going to move the A14 amendment. And I know Representative Albright, who is not able to join us today, also has the A13 amendment. These are identical amendments. So I request your support for this amendment. And it is a no-cost amendment. So again, I'm going to renew my motion to adopt the A14. Are there any questions on this amendment? Not seeing any questions. So all those members in favor of adopting the A14 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. Oh, Representative Sandell.
Thanks, Chair Schultz. I just wanted to say thanks on behalf of the constituents who contacted me and other members of the committee to consider this change, and I appreciate your attention. Thanks.
Thanks, Representative Sandell. So the motion prevails and the A14 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, are there any other amendments that you wish to offer? Representative Rasmussen.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, is the question about amendments that we'd be offering today? Okay.
Yep, go ahead.
Great. Well, Madam Chair, I would move the A1 amendment to put it before the committee.
Okay, Representative Rasmussen moves the A1 amendment. Please describe your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This amendment would add House File 1305 to our Human Services Omnibus. I thank Chair Schultz for the opportunity to have a hearing on House File 1305 earlier this session. I also want to thank Representative Jessica Hansen and Representative Heather Keeler for being co-authors on the bill with me. As a reminder to members, House File 1305 allows DHS to establish a statewide reimbursement rate for residential crisis stabilization units that currently operate under the adult foster care license. There are only three of these facilities in the state, but they provide critical services to our neighbors experiencing a mental health crisis. Currently, DHS doesn't have statutory authority to develop rates for these services, so DHS reimburses providers under adult foster care. But both providers and DHS recognize that the 24-hour mental health services provided by crisis stabilization units cost much more than the adult foster care rate. If crisis stabilization units aren't available, hospitalization is the alternative for most patients, which costs the state factors more than crisis stabilization services. The amendment gives DHS statutory authority to develop a statewide rate. Without this change, we are at risk of losing our remaining crisis stabilization units. DHS has observed a shrinking number of providers, not because of lack of demand, but given the unsustainable rate structure. I also want to update committee members that NAMI Minnesota is urging support for this bill, in addition to the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Both submitted letters of support to the committee. Preserving crisis stabilization services is particularly important for Minnesota's Latino community who live in rural areas. The Council on Latino Affairs has identified access to crisis stabilization services as a key driver of disparities in Latinos' access to mental health treatment in Minnesota. The fiscal note on this bill is only $37,000 for the biennium and $52,000 in the tails. Since these services prevent hospitalization, I would argue that the real cost of the state is much lower and potentially a net cost savings. After introducing the bill, I received a letter from a constituent named Laura. Laura's story begins as a stay-at-home mom who found herself facing severe treatment-resistant depression. She said in her letter, "As excruciating and painful as it was to leave my home and my family, I knew I needed a safe environment to go, which could support my healing. The crisis stabilization unit was there in one of my desperate times. They provided a healing place. I was able to stay in my community and stay close to my family. Crisis stabilization provided me a safe and supportive environment, which perpetuated my healing. I'm happy to say today, Laura is not only doing much better, but went on to become a certified peer support specialist and actually currently works at the crisis stabilization unit in Fergus Falls that served her as a patient, helping others on their path to healing and recovery. Members, with your support, we can have more stories like Laura's. This bill is bipartisan, it's cheap, it improves mental health disparities, and has received a full vetting in both chambers. And with that, Madam Chair, members, I would humbly ask for your support of the amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak up because crisis stabilization is an extremely critical part of our work toward creating a functional mental health system statewide. And so I'm really grateful for Representative Rasmussen's work on this. When our stabilization programs are not strong, it impacts the entirety of our system and the lives of everyone connected to the individuals who is experiencing the crisis. We have years of academic research that have clearly showed that crisis stabilization is both a preventative measure and an effective investment. So I'm happy to support this bill and I'm a co-author and I'm looking forward to this becoming law.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to Representative Rasmussen for bringing this amendment. I am not a co-author, but I think it's a great bill and I appreciate that it is bipartisan. And I just wanted to point out that this omnibus bill we're putting together today currently has no GOP chief authored provisions. And so I think adding this amendment would also help the bill by strengthening that there are GOP authored provisions in this bill. The Senate companion that's moving through right now in Senator Abler's committee has 9 DFL authored provisions by 4 different DFL chief authors. So I just appreciate bipartisan work and I hope that our committee will adopt this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And I will just say that many, many of the bills we included in the omnibus have bipartisan support. And how things just normally work in the legislature is that advocates and stakeholders often prefer their chief author to be those in the majority. And so that's why so many of the bills are chief authored by DFL members, but so many of our bills have bipartisan support. So I really do think our omnibus bill is a bipartisan bill. And I don't always like to talk about what the Senate is doing, but in the Senate, a lot of those bills with DFL authors are the governor's position bills that the DFL legislators carried that we also have in our bill. But I do really appreciate Representative Rasmussen's work on this. And I wanna continue to work on it with him. I have some questions about why it's limited to only facilities with 4 or fewer residents and other questions about when we put a rate structure in and we index it to or include inflation, what that could happen, and also have the Behavioral Health Committee work on it. I know they didn't hear it, but how this fits into the overall picture on mental health and services. But I'll go to the next question. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do see that Representative Keel has her hand up too, but I assume that was probably for another amendment. I don't want to jump in front of her, though, if it is for
Representative Keel, did you have a question or comment on Representative Rasmussen's bill?
amendment? At this point, my hand was up for another bill. But,
okay, we'll come back. We'll come back to you. Yeah. Keep your hand up,
all
please.
Right.
Chair Liebling.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, thank you for Representative Rasmussen for your work on this. And I do have just a question about kind of how it fits into the range of services that are available around the state, because, you know, I think it's super important to have the kind of service you're talking about, but surely in our system, it's only not only three places where a person can get access to a service that meets their need when they have a crisis. I mean, I don't fully understand the whole range of services available, but are there other services of perhaps with other names in other, you know, like we have recently expanded the federal demonstration on the CCBHC, which provides a community, I don't know if I can tell you what that acronym actually means, but there are lots of different named services that we provide in this state, and we're really trying to build out a system that, in fact, a few years ago, I know you're new in the legislature, but, you know, I know Senator Senjum, who's a senator from my area, worked hard on getting some building new crisis centers, mental health centers. So there are lots of different ways that people are trying to address the need. And we all know it's a big need for an improved system or a system of mental health services. I wonder if you can discuss that, if you, you know, I don't know whether you've, how deeply you've worked on this list. Sure sounds like you know a lot about it. If you can give us any more information about, you know, where else or how else these might be provided around the state.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Liebling, for the question. I think that's the exact right question to ask. And there, you're correct. There is a continuum of care. There's a spectrum of care when it comes to residential mental health treatment. The origin of how these four unit crisis stabilization units fit into the broader ecosystem is DHS had a grant process where they basically said, you know, we need to try to get more crisis stabilization beds access out in Greater Minnesota in particular, where you wouldn't have a larger facility. And so that is for the four bed. And then once they actually got the grants, I believe the one in Fergus Falls, for example, came through an adult mental health initiative grant through DHS. They basically said, we don't have anywhere to put you from a rate structure. And that didn't come along with it. So they said, well, we'll put you under the adult foster care licensure, understanding from DHS's perspective that this isn't sustainable longer term and requires those organizations to go write for grants and fund it for other purposes. And so this is definitely not a solve for our mental health crisis and the beds that we need to add. But I do think it's a critical piece for these communities. And oftentimes they actually serve quite a broad area. And so the one in Fergus Falls, serves people from all over West Central Minnesota, and even all over Minnesota, they will take calls for people. And so I think it's a small fix. It's not a comprehensive fix for mental health care, but they've kind of found themselves in this situation where they need this legislation to really have a sustainable model. So thank you, Chair Schultz. And I don't know, Chair Liebling, if that answers your question or not.
Chair Liebling?
That's helpful. Thank you.
Representative Rasmussen, your facility in your district, how many beds does that facility have?
Four beds.
Four beds. So this bill is limited to facilities of that size or smaller. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. Okay. They're four bed units.
Okay. Are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Any other questions? Any other comments, Representative Rasmussen?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present this. I want to thank Chair Schultz for your support of this bill, and I very much appreciate the personal commitment to getting this bill done this session and included in the conference report. And so, out of respect for Chair Schultz's commitment for getting this bill done with me, I will withdraw the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. That's great, because then I didn't have to rule it out of order since we don't have funding yet in our budget target. But I know it is in Senator Abler's omnibus, I believe that's correct. And we'll work on it until we get to conference committee. We'll try to address some of the concerns that have been raised and questions, and we'll learn more about it and see how it fits in with our mental health crisis stabilization network across the state. So thank you for working on it. Look forward to working on it with you the rest of the session until we get to conference committee, where hopefully we'll have more money available to fund all of these great initiatives you all are working on. Okay, so the A1 amendment was withdrawn. Representative Keel, would you like to offer an amendment?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just FYI, I'm having some unstable internet service. So we had a major fire up here and I think it's affecting it. But anyway, I'm going to try. If we have problems, I'll call back on my phone. This is House File 2099, which addresses the basic care aid. When we went into COVID-19, we're having a lot of problems with staffing, especially nursing homes, the home care aides, those types of situations. And so DHS and the governor decided to allow less training for than what was mandated. And as we move forward, it is discovered that they can do some of that training. Now they have a whole year to satisfy the training requirements for the state, but this bill asks, there's no cost to it. It asks that we continue this this type of training, that it's a month long training that they would be required to work on, an hour of training, so that they have the correct information that they need to address. But it is a basic care aid, so that I don't want people to think they're coming in and doing distribution of drugs or meds or any of those things, that they're trained and that they can help and train inside the facility, so that they understand the needs that have to happen for senior citizens. I would imagine quite a bit of it, but just important as we try to keep these facilities staffed appropriately, so that they have enough staffing, because some of it is just really in need. Things like being able to help residents eat, or make sure their teeth are brushed, or help them to move, or even to position, move them in a way that would help them to not get bed sores or those kinds of issues. Obviously making sure that they are well hydrated, and then helping to prevent infection controls, so that you've got more eyes on the residents that live in these facilities. So, like I said, there is no cost to this. I would really urge the members to support this bill as we move forward. And I don't know if you have any questions.
So Representative Keel, you would like to move the A9 amendment?
Oh, yes.
Okay, Representative Keel moves the A9 amendment. Are there any questions for Representative Keel? Okay, Representative Keel, I know that this bill was dropped fairly, later in session. And I know that I understand how important it is to try to address the workforce shortages that are facing our long-term care facilities. And I know they're looking for solutions, and I'm looking forward to working with you on this. I know this bill, just from what little I know, that it requires federal waivers that MDH will have to seek. So I don't have 100% guarantee that it's no cost. I don't know if a fiscal note was completed, but also there's just concerns about scope of practice and this is a federal issue in terms of the regulation of nursing facilities and skilled nursing facilities. So I think that it needs more work. So I'm not gonna recommend that we adopt this amendment. We can work on it the rest of session, after session, and next year, and I work with the long-term care facilities and providers to figure out if this is a path forward and how we can partner with our federal delegation to get federal assistance for this new classification of employee in long-term care. Chair Liebling?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Keel, I also think this is an interesting idea. And one question I have about it, and I'm sorry if I missed this, if you said this, but do folks doing this need a background check? And they, you know, I mean, I saw you shook your head. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, I wish it was, and part of me wishes that it was easier to sort of just get people into nursing homes to just help out. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where this is going. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, you know, especially under COVID, we've seen how, you know, nursing homes tend to get a little walled off from the community. And it would be lovely if we could just break those walls a little bit and have more of the community interacting with people. And, you know, there would be so many benefits to that. But unfortunately, you know, because it is an area with a lot of regulation and, you know, there are a lot of concerns that have to be balanced. I'd love to see all of that get worked out so that at some point we could, be fully supported. So anyway, I just wanted to make those comments. I kind of appreciate what this does, but I also sort of feel like it's not something I would be able to support right away today. So thank you.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in our fear of making sure that people are safe, our nursing homes and basic care areas are really lacking people. There's a lot of times I'm with family that I'll do something and staff comes in right away and says, oh, you're an RN or you're this. No, I'm not. But I worked as an aide a long time ago. And actually, that was how I learned. I followed nurses and RNs were training us then in both hospital and nursing home. So I learned a lot of different things and reasons why you do what you do. They aren't as simple as, oh, we'll just feed somebody. There's some real technical knowledge that you have to have, especially if someone has issues just eating, and they can be multiple. But I really think that just the basic care is really important for our seniors, our people that are in those facilities, that somebody can see, oh, there's a problem. Or, you know, when you don't have enough staff, people can't go to the bathroom. You know, that's just a rational, I need to have help to move and to be able to be cared for. So I really wish we would consider this because the issue is now we're in that existence. Should executive order especially go off, this is going to be a change for the nursing homes that they're going to have trouble with. So this just gives them longer to get them trained. It doesn't say they aren't trained. It doesn't say they cannot. They have to follow the laws. They have to have background training or background checks. They have to do, they have to have all the safety. They have to know about wound care. They have to know about not spreading infection control is what I'm looking for, not wound care. But it is really important. So I would urge us to actually consider this.
Thank you, Representative Keel. How does this classification differ from other entry-level positions in long-term care like CNAs?
That would be just a little bit, you wouldn't be certified. You would have to work a year, you know, you'd work to be certified. So that's what this says. You just get a little bit longer to do it, which is what DHS has done now. Well, you can hire somebody during this emergency, but they have to be certified within the year.
Okay, because I know I have a lot of students that work as CNAs and while they're students. So I'm familiar with what they're dealing with right now and the stresses in long-term care and the important work they're doing. So at this time, so you're officially offering the A9 amendment. A9. And if we don't know if there is cost or not, did you clarify whether there was a fiscal note created for the bill?
My understanding is it did not because it's less training than they would normally, you know, they would take a year to do that. So they would be training anyway. So I can check on it, but my understanding is there was no cost to this.
Okay, so we'll, any other questions for members for Representative Keel on the A9 amendment? Okay, so Representative Keel renews her motion for the A9 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed aye. Say no.
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 Okay, the motion does not prevail and the A9 amendment is not adopted. But Representative Keel, let's work on this and see what we can do. If it's policy only and no cost, we have time to do that next session as well with more input from providers in educating us. Chair Liebling.
Sorry, didn't mean to do that.
Okay. Any other amendments members would like to offer? Not seeing any amendments. Okay. We have gone through our agenda. So now I'm going to, there are no more amendments. I'm going to renew my motion to adopt the DE1 as amended onto House File 2127. All those in favor of adopting the DE1 as amended, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Okay, the motion prevails in the DE1 as amended. Is it as amended onto 2127? That amendment is adopted. Okay, on to the underlying bill. So my motion is to re-refer House File 2127 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. And nonpartisan staff are directed to make any technical changes or corrections as needed. Is there any discussion to the underlying bill as amended? Any discussion about this omnibus bill as amended? I'm not seeing any questions or discussion. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate your leadership of the committee and appreciate the work we have done. I think there are several good things in this bill. And I know a lot of this is long-term work. Having served on the similar version of this committee in my first term as well, I've really gained an appreciation for how long some of these changes to these very big programs take and how incredibly complex a lot of these systems are. But that being said, Madam Chair, I just have to say that I am I do have concerns about this bill, and I will not be voting for it. And one of the main reasons is a lot of the growth in cost, especially in some of the cash assistance payments. But honestly, the bigger concern I have is that we're doing a lot of changes to behavioral health, and we did not even address the OLA report, which found noncompliance on many fronts. And I was here last session when we really worked hard, tried to work hard on addressing all the different problems at DHS with management and oversight. And honestly, I had much higher expectations that we would have progressed beyond where we are in addressing those issues. And I recall all the discussion of the Swiss watch and the stabilization programs and all of this. And to have the OLA report come out and find not adequate internal controls and did not comply with legal requirements. For members who aren't familiar with the OLA reports, I just want you to know those are the worst ratings. Not adequate and did not comply. That's the very lowest bar or highest level of concern that the OLA can state. And for us not to have addressed any of these issues and to just continue to give these grants without having even addressed it with the commissioner or asked for her discussion of the OLA gave 26 recommendations. Perhaps we should, at least in the bill, direct the commissioner to address those recommendations, provide some oversight. I feel like our role as providing oversight of the department has been neglected in this bill, and I have severe concerns about it. So I'm requesting Chair Schultz that once, I know committees are supposed to disband and be done, but I hope you will not wait till next session to have a hearing on the most recent OLA report of what's going on in the Behavioral Health Division. I find this very concerning that we're 2 years post the last sort of crisis, and here we are again with the very similar management problems identified. And so I was going to sit here and read all the findings for you. There are many of them, but I don't want to take the committee's time. But for committee members who have not read the most recent OLA report on the Behavioral Health Division, I hope you will all take it seriously and that we will perform our duties of oversight as a body. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And I will say we've had the commissioner before us many times, and she's talked about her initiative she's enacted immediately upon becoming commissioner, and it was Stop Gap and Swish Watch, but looking at internally the processes. And she has told us how she is addressing those concerns in the OLA report, how she got ahead of it and is addressing them, and they have less than 1% error rate, the non-compliant rate. So she's working on it. She will continually update this committee on the progress she's and her team they're making to address the OLA report and concerns. But we get weekly updates as chairs, and she's kept us well informed and has made significant progress on addressing almost all of those concerns. And they have more work to do, but I'm really confident that they're making a lot of progress.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm glad that you have that confidence, and perhaps maybe she could share that information with the rest of us, because I do not have that confidence. And I don't think members of the public have that confidence. And I mean, I'm very concerned about it. She has been before us and talked about the Swiss watch and showed us all her PowerPoints, but I have not really seen changes in how things are happening. And certainly no one's been held accountable. And that's very concerning. She keeps talking about how she wants to hold the system accountable, but the system is made up of people. And for the people who are not signing off on how these grants are paid, the people who are not holding grantees accountable for their expenditures, people who are not doing their jobs, there must be at some level accountability for people in the organization. And I'm afraid we have not seen that over the last 2 years, and I don't have confidence she will do that on a go forward basis. So that is why I think we need to have another hearing based on the specific issues going on in the Behavioral Health Division. So I do request, Madam Chair, that you will schedule such a hearing at your earliest convenience. I know we're all very busy, but hopefully we'll have time before the end of this session.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And I will note, in this omnibus bill, the agency's requested funding to hire individuals to look at, to work on compliance and processing grants. You have to understand DHS funnels a lot of money, federal money, through the agency to distribute. And it's a very complex organization. And I think these new hires will help address some of those concerns in behavioral health. And we'll hear more about that when we have more informational hearings the rest of the session and into next year. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too have some real concerns about this bill. As we look forward to, I'm going to go back. I've been here, this is my 11th year. When I was a freshman, my first year, I remember us removing the fact that in disability services that families could no longer serve as PCAs. And I really find myself betwixt and between that conversation. But when you find people applying to take care of a family member for 25, 26 hours, which was the conversation in 2011, I believe it was, that concerns me. Who's got 20? I mean, I had some days would like 26 hours in the day so I can get more done. But the reality is we're paying for more than is there. And that really concerns me, that we're making sure there is no fraud in that.
because in fact, what we're doing is taking away services from someone else that needs them. And I've seen some real concerning issues between
I think we've lost Representative Keel. Representative Keel will come back to your concerns.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Am I there?
Now you are. Do you want to?
Okay. I apologize.
Go ahead and continue right now. Go ahead.
So my concerns about the disability services is that we make sure that there's no fraud. And like Representative Robbins, I am concerned that we don't have a hold of this. DHS has had some real, I realize they're busy. There's a lot of money, but we need to make sure that that money is appropriately spent for those who need help and those who are using the system. So we need to make sure that that's all taken care of. The other concern I have is we did not have, to my knowledge, we did not have any cultural and ethnic communities leadership council conversations. We've had many members about corruption or many emails about members concerned about corruption problems. And the community members that serve on there, and I've been on that committee. So real concerns about what's going on there just really, really need to have a better handle on that. Even when I was there, the commissioner at that point was new and she even questioned a couple things. So, but I'm very concerned about that issue. So I will move on because I know others want to talk. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel, and I urge you to work with Mahmoud Noor, Representative Noor, on the Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council issues if you would like to get involved and figure out any issues or concerns that they or former members may have. Chair Liebling.
Okay, so thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to make a couple comments or responses to things that were said. You know, first of all, I think people need to understand that the OLA report is a look back. It takes a long time to do one of those reports. And that report all relates to things that were happening before Commissioner Harpstead took the helm of the agency. So if Representative Robbins or any other member wanted to do anything with those particular recommendations, that would have been the subject of a bill. And to my knowledge, there hasn't been a bill filed to do anything with any of those particular recommendations. But I do agree with Representative Schultz. And of course, I appreciate that you are not all, you know, having weekly conversations with the commissioner. That just wouldn't be really feasible. But she has come before this committee and the health committee and talked extensively about the things that she has done to improve the functioning of the agency. And in fact, in the recent, there was a recent review of the use of the Federal CARES Act funds. And if I'm stating this right, there was not one finding of there being a problem with how that money was used. So, you know, of course, there are always going to be errors that happen, because as Chair Schultz says, it's extremely complex systems. The rules, as you all know, just from the complexity of the things that we have all been dealing with here, the rules are extremely complex. And doing this in a way that is error-free is a real challenge. But I am actually quite proud of the changes she's made. And for the first time in a very long time, we have at the helm of the agency someone who has true deep management expertise, and it is showing. So I think that the allegation that somehow that the agency is not worthy of handling our business because of things that, you know, were found to be a problem looking back quite some time now that are in fact being fixed and have been fixed, I think that's rather unfair. Other things I wanted to say, just to comment. I know Representative Keel commented about the family PCA, and I do remember this was a concern. You know, this is a very big program, and there were concerns years back about fraud and things were tightened up. And we now have, I think e-verification probably impacts this. I don't think we had that back then. We do now. But also, it's really important to allow family members to be PCAs for a couple of big reasons. One is, as everybody here knows, there's a tremendous shortage of PCAs. You know, oftentimes it's a matter, especially during COVID, it's a matter of searching and searching for somebody that's not a family member who you may not even find anybody, or having somebody who doesn't have to come in who could do it and do it very well, except that they can't afford to because they have to go work another job. So this allowing family members to be serve as PCAs, while I get that we have to be careful and vigilant about fraud across all these programs, again, we go back to how complex this is and how difficult it is to manage. It's always a careful balance, and we're always trying to adjust the balance between things that we want to see happen and trying to rein in fraud without so much administrative complexity that we're just overloading the system and making people jump through unreasonable hoops. We always have that balance, but I think the family PCA piece is super important. And finally, I just want to comment on the CECLC issue. And just to say that I do attend those meetings. That doesn't mean that I think that that's going to be handed off to Representative Schultz now because of the way our committees have been divided. I'm a member of it by virtue of being a chair of HHS, but also there are Republican members too, I think the leads, I'm not exactly sure, but there are supposed to be other members attending. And I have to say, in my time on that committee, I've never seen one Republican member attend. So I don't know who exactly that's supposed to be, but I think it would behoove us all to start paying attention there, you know, without getting into the particular concerns and problems that are being raised in those emails. But I appreciate that Representative Nora has taken this on, and I think he's very carefully looked at what the issues are, and I fully support the bill that he's brought forward that is in this omnibus. So thank you, Madam Chair. I am very proud to vote yes for this bill, and I really appreciate the incredible work that's been done by members on these very complex issues and by Chair Schultz, who's just, I think, done an outstanding job. No bill is ever perfect, but this one is surely worthy of everybody's support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. And I will say that I, in 2009, I believe that was the last OLA report that I think has been referenced here on the PCA compliance and fraud. And the recent OLA report on PCAs that came out in 2020 concluded that DHS and the legislature made changes since that last evaluation in 2009 to strengthen the program integrity, and concluded that there was a much improved ability to prevent fraud and implausible hours. So I think DHS has really addressed a lot of those concerns that were brought up earlier. Okay, the next member, Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I first want to say thank you for the great bill that you put together. I want to recognize the amount of effort that was done to take in a lot of the bills that came out of the Behavioral Health Division. All the bills that came out of that division had strong bipartisan support. Every bill came out with a yes, all yes votes. There were no votes on any of the bills that came out of our division. And that's because of the hard work that was being put in. I spent long hours with Representative Franke putting many things together. I know some areas we still have to do a little bit more work when we get to conference on the SUD, substance use disorder area. I know we have work to do there, but when we take a look at the behavioral health area, when we take a look at the mental health uniform standards that are coming out, a lot of great work went into those bills, and it was because of everyone working together to make that happen. So I want to say there's a lot of, as a matter of fact, many pages of this bill were things that came straight out of this committee that were well vetted. So it's, when I take a look at it, it seems it's almost half the things that dealt with in our committee. So I want to thank you for taking those things under advisement and making them part of your bill. I also want to mention the response on the Office of the Legislative Auditor on their report. Very early in our meetings in the Behavioral Health Division, Commissioner Harpstad had come to us, and she did a report to us about an internal audit that they had done when she had first started. And that led to a restructuring of the whole division. And a lot of things that they ended up doing, they brought in new staff, people were moved around, and it sounded like to me there was a lot of accountability that was done in the process. Some of it, people who were doing things that they were very good at working with people but did not have strong financial skills, they moved people from the areas that required finance, brought in people who were good at finance, do finance issues, keeping people who could do the human interaction issues in the human interactions things. So she was making sure people would be moved in the spots that they would do excel at and do well to make the agency look good. And just within the last week or two, we had a chance to meet with the commissioner about the Office of Legislator Audit Report. And it was almost verbatim what was got in that report is the same report that she had done internally in her agency. So it was something we had a lot of discussion in our agency. I know that when I was meeting with the commissioner, Representative Baker, Representative Frankie were there too. And we were all taking a look at, we appreciated where the commissioner was and realized that everything that she was working on that was referenced in the report were things she was already working on that she had already identified when she came in at that point in time. And since she's been there, there have been no new findings that have come out. She's been running a very good ship. She's brought in the experts to make sure that it happens. And it was something that we did spend a bit of time discussing in our committee.
Thank you, Chair Fischer. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a brief note of thanks to you for the, more broadly for the committee and for this bill in particular. And I guess it strikes me that our work in human services, there's the process complexity even just within the legislature of having multiple other committees connect to our work. I'm grateful to Chair Fischer for the work of the Behavioral Health Committee. We've got the Preventing Homelessness Division as well. There's the connection in my work in early childhood and Chair Liebling's Committee on Health. Our chair seems to me has to be a certain amount of a traffic cop in terms of sort of making those connections to all the other committees. That's complicated enough. But then thinking about the substance of this bill, we've even just in our conversation this morning, members really been made aware, I think, of how the process of serving humans, where it's the Human Services Committee, we're serving people, making sure that people can live out their very best lives and can live lives of dignity and thriving. There's also concerns about use of public funds. We're concerned about making sure that they're being used effectively. This just raises a lot of really complicated issues. And so we've worked through them really well, I think, as a committee. And again, I'm grateful to the work of the chair in guiding us through that. And I think that the bill that then is before us now really does live out those values in a really, really effective way. There's a number of things I'm very excited about. I guess I'll just note one thing is just the cost of living adjustment for MFIP payments in terms of allowing people to be able to continue to live in dignity and have their have those payments reflect the economic reality that is inflation. There is so much else. I think we're all aware of it. I will be a very proud yes vote. And I think that we can be really proud as a team and as a committee of the work that we've done, working through these complexities and ending up with a product that is going to make Minnesotans' lives better. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Vice Chair Bonner.
Thank you. I'll try to be as brief as possible. I know we're trying to move forward. I just wanted to address really quickly the piece around the OLA report. I know we actually had a lot of conversations with the commissioner about this particular topic. There were a number of hearings when some of those findings originally came out, and there were extensive conversations about measures that she was using to improve that process and do a really deep dive into some of those situations and how to improve them. And one of the things that she brought up that's a part of that conversation is the concept of continuous improvement. And as someone who actually has an expertise in this particular area, I can tell you that part of continuous improvement is the continual feedback loop of reevaluation on how things are going, what improvements need to be made, and how we can continue to improve along that process. So I just wanted to be clear that when we talk about this, some of the measures that the commissioner has implemented actually include a continuous feedback loop where we're constantly evaluating and reevaluating and look at how we can continue to improve. And I think that's a really critical piece moving forward in how we make sure that we don't revisit some of the errors of the past. So I just wanted to make sure that that is really clear, because I know not everyone on the committee maybe has that same background knowledge that I do. And the other last thing is I just wanted to say a really huge thank you to the members and to the staff. You know, it's been alluded to earlier, the complexity of the issues that we're dealing with in this committee are incredible. I mean, they are deep, they are challenging, and certainly they often take years to really work through with stakeholders and interested parties to find the path forward and the best solutions. And I know Representative Hansen even mentioned how they had to really work for those innovative solutions. So I just feel really confident that we also made really good priorities in investing in mental health that has become really a considerable issue in the last few years, and particularly during COVID. And I think this bill really reflects that is a value for us, that we want to take care of people. And so I'm really proud of this bill. I think the members have done a tremendous job. The staff has worked excruciating hours to get it done. And I just want to thank them all for their work.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bonner. Okay, members, I just want to make a lot of thank yous. We're going to be meeting again for informational hearings on various bills. So this isn't the last time we'll be together this year. But I also really want to note that, you know, I ran for the legislature to help improve the lives of Minnesotans, particularly our most vulnerable. And I think this bill goes a long way to improving people's lives in various ways, and to address a lot of the social determinants of health, and to address inequities and racial inequities, economic inequities. But we do have a lot more work to do. And I've been really impressed with all of your work on your bills. And it's very, very hard to have to prioritize bills and not fund everything. But as you know, we have finite resources, limited state budgets, and we have to balance those budgets. So unless we're committed to raising new revenue to fund all these initiatives, we had to prioritize and look to see where we could generate the most value, the biggest improvement in people's lives with the budget we're given. So with that, members, I want to thank our staff, our nonpartisan fiscal staff. Doug Berg has been working nonstop putting together our budget sheets and helping us with our budget priorities. Randy Chun, Elizabeth Clarkvist, Danielle Punelli, Sarah Sunderman, putting together and drafting our omnibus bills and working with various members on their bills independently. My CA, Yingya Vang, this is her first job as a CA. This is the hardest committee to be a CA, and I've been so impressed with what she's brought, and it's really helped me as chair. So thank you, Ms. Vang. Lindsay Hansen, our CLA, she's been my LA for a long time. She helps keep everything running smoothly, and I'd say that we've been on time every hearing. We have not gone over, so I'm very impressed with her ability to keep us on track and all the things she does to make my life manageable. Joe Durheim, our staff member who puts together our wonderful research briefs and helps us understand the bills. Thank you for all the work you're doing and the long hours you're putting in as well. Chris McCall and Patrick McQuillan. Chair Liebling, thank you. You've been a great role model for me, and I continue to learn every day. And then Jeremiah Wingstead, I know Lead Albright isn't here, but thank you for working with our friends across the aisle on human services issues. I don't know how you do everything. it's amazing work you all do. I just want to thank all the staff for working and continuing work. We do have more to do in human services. It never ends. But it's been interesting being chair. It's a lot of work. I kind of miss being able to work on individual bills, but I'm still learning a lot, and I hope that we can work together in a bipartisan way to continue improving the lives of Minnesotans, particularly those that need assistance more than others. I'm wondering if a Republican lead wants to make any comments and thank their staff. Representative Robbins or Representative Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if Representative Keel has good internet, but I'm happy to defer to you, Deb.
Representative Keel, would you like to make some closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I am thankful for all the work that we do, because we're all intending to better the lives of our fellow citizens. And really appreciate that. I really appreciate the staff, the nonpartisan staff, and you know, all the information that is given and the work, hard work they do. And at the last minute, they're fixing things for us or adjusting. And more importantly, I would like to, you know, also thank Jeremiah Winstead for all the work he does. He's very helpful in keeping us on the straight and narrow and understanding what needs to happen and just the background. I appreciate our ability to work with multiple and challenging issues. And hopefully in the end, we can really help Minnesotans. And that's a concern. I thank you, Madam Chair, for your work.
Thank you. I also want to thank the chairs, Chair Fisher for his work in behavioral health, Chair Pinto for all the work he's doing in early childhood, Chair Gomez for work on preventing homelessness. And it's been, I think, a productive year. We have a very large omnibus bill. We try to get as much done as possible this year. So thank you for all the chairs working on their various issues and being able to focus in on those areas has been very helpful for me to focus on other areas. So that's been great. So I need to renew my motion to re-refer House File 2127 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee and direct nonpartisan staff to continue to make any technical changes or corrections as needed. So that's my motion. All those in, we're going to do a roll call vote on that motion to re-refer the bill to Ways and Means. Ms. Hansen, chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Albright, excused. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, no.
Burkle, no. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, no.
Keel, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Knorr?
Yes.
Knorr, yes. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, nay.
Pearson, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Robbins?
No.
Robbins, no. Representative Sandel?
Yes.
Sandel, yes. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Chair Schultz, that's 11 ayes, 7 noes, 1 excused. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. So with that, members, the motion prevails and House File 2127 as amended will be in the Ways and Means Committee. And just as a reminder, this bill will be merged with Chair Liebling's Health, Finance, and Policy Bill and Chair Pinto's Early Childhood Bill in Ways and Means. So with that, are there any other comments from members or questions about the process? So look for your emails. We'll send out a notice the next time we will be meeting to take up informational hearings on bills or other issues. I'm not seeing any other comments or questions from members. So we will not be meeting tomorrow at 8:30. I appreciate all the work you're doing. If you want to talk to me anytime about various bills, please reach out to me. I'm happy to discuss paths forward for your bills or questions, or if you have corrections on bills that are in the omnibus, or if you see mistakes in our omnibus, please reach out to us as soon as possible. It's a lot to go through, and we'd like to catch those mistakes before they come to the House floor. Okay, with that, members, we are adjourned. Everyone have a great day and a good Friday tomorrow and weekend. Bye-bye.